I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Drum. Welcome back, Martin.
It's a pleasure as always, Michael.
Well, I'm wondering about the pleasure bit. I'm getting older, Martin. When I was younger, I'd hear about doomsday, and I thought, oh, those older people, what's on their minds? Well, it's on mine, Martin. Looking at a dictionary definition of doomsday, appropriately from the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language, 5th edition. Judgment Day, an anticipated or feared catastrophic event, especially one on a global scale, a day of sentence or condemnation, day of death. Well, the catastrophic feared event on a global scale, Martin, United States, through President Trump, a man who'd like to be president for life, and perhaps that'll happen yet, has completely upended, as I see it, Martin, and I want to ask you if you see it this way, post-Second World War international relations, the way the world works, the existence of NATO, how powerful countries are going to solve the world's problems. My question is, in the end, where do we stand in Australia? What are you making of all of this?
It's an extraordinary times that we live in. At the very heart of international relations, like one of the core and enduring things through lots of change has been the US's alliance with NATO. It's probably the most famous military strategic alliance in the world since World War II. Of course, the biggest threat to NATO over time, you know, it's ebbed and waned occasionally, but it's always been Russia. So US's, you know, most strident allies traditionally had been in Europe, and Russia had been, you know, NATO was the bulwark against Russian aggression. That seems to be, you know, being upended somewhat by very recent events. And this, you know, extraordinary amount of uncertainty as to what happens next. You had J.D. Vance go to the European leaders and kind of tell them they're being undemocratic, which in Europe was an extraordinary, the Europeans found this an extraordinary accusation to make, especially from a government that doesn't think it should subject itself to judicial oversight of their actions. So I think most people in Europe see American democracy as a bit of a basket case, so they're rather bemused to get that allegation from Vance. But this is feeding directly into the Ukraine conflict, where Trump is labeling Zelensky a dictator and then inferring that somehow the war is his fault. I mean, these are very black and white facts, in that Russia has invaded Ukraine, first in 2014 with Crimea and then more recently in 2022. And so it's quite an extraordinary thing to say. And people are really worried about what kind of deal that might be cut between US and Russia, given that Ukraine seems to be cut out of any of those discussions at the moment. So we really are in extraordinary times, and it's quite unpredictable now. Europeans are gathering together to work out what they can do. You had Keith Starmer say that the Brits would put troops in Ukraine if they need to as peacekeepers. So there's a lot of really uncertain things.
Martin, after the Second World War, or as it was sort of coming to an end, the superpower leaders at that point met at Yalta. Who were they? What did they decide? Did they involve anybody whose interests were directly affected?
Oh, well, they certainly did, and they spoke for everyone else. This is you're asking a history lesson here. I believe it was Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt.
Exactly.
Russia,
UK and America. They turn up on the Black Sea at Yalta and say, how are we going to work the world out once we've cleaned up Nazi Germany?
There's a bit of that here. Is Putin and next thing they have Xi in there, Michael. So you'll have Putin, Xi and Trump sitting down somewhere and deciding that they're going to carve up their interests internationally. Who knows?
It looks like that, though, doesn't it? It really does look like that.
I'm not against, I've got to say, Michael, I'm not against some form of rapprochement between Russia and the West, because de-escalation and peace is a good thing. It's more around the terms, and that's what worries a lot of people. You've got Russian aggression. Are they just going to be giving away Ukrainian territory to Russia? What happens if you're one of the other countries that are bordered by Russia? Poland, for instance, and others, they're worried about their security. What happens next? I think it's more around ensuring that the Russians don't think they've got impunity to do the same thing again.
Imagine if Australia were in Ukraine's position, and then the man who wants to be president for life says, "Well, look, we'll work something out with the people you say are the aggressors against your country, but the terms of the deal, because we've also lent you money and given you armaments over time, is that we want mineral rights to the whole of Australia." I mean, how would
Yeah,
you?
well, let's just bring this back to Australia for a second, Michael. Australia is already investing hundreds of millions of dollars, and it will be billions, billions and billions of dollars in this AUKUS partnership to get US submarines. What if at some stage someone gets in Trump's ear and says, well, to keep building those submarines for Australia, you're not going to build as many for the US? Could you really? So would Trump be reliable in fulfilling his end of the bargain for our investment in money and time in AUKUS? Because at the moment, it's not really very clear how much he sort of values those existing relationships. So, look, there's a lot of things that are pretty unclear at the moment.
Well, it really does beg the question. If you've got JD Vance lecturing the European leaders, those from NATO, in Munich, saying how it's lovely to be there and he loves the Germans and what's wrong with the far right of German politics and freedom of speech has to be respected. What can you expect when it comes to us? Why don't you replace the words Europe or EU or NATO in JD Vance's speech and sort of put Australia? Why do we think that we are to be treated any differently? And is not Malcolm Turnbull right the other day when he said, "Can we really deal with these people?"
I think that's the worry. The worry is about, our existing assurances now still assurances. There might be some hope where there's existing legal agreements, but even with legal agreements, you can go to world bodies. But is Trump going to accept their decisions by, the WTO and other things? You just don't know. So it's a very interesting world that we live in.
Well, the other thing that's happening, I suppose, Martin, and you can't help but get back to the Australian position. Australians need to work out where they stand, where they fit in this new world order. I suspect that a lot of younger Australians, those voting for the first time, whatever Gen Z is, I can get mixed up with all of these Gens, Martin, you'll be closer to them. Are they going to take this lying down? Do they all want to be the 51st or 52nd state, perhaps after Canada, of the United States? Are we all going to fall behind? Or is Australia, do you think, suddenly with this new world order, going to take a completely different view of it?
I think that what you could well get is, I mean, at the moment, a lot of people naturally have seen the US as a partner we want to work with. I'm not sure that that's all gone by the wayside yet. Time will tell. There's a lot more water to go under that bridge. But down the track, are young people going to be as committed to that relationship with the US, young people in Australia? It's not clear. The number one tourist destination, Michael, ironically, interestingly, I should say, is Japan at the moment from Australia. And tourism traffic, I'm told, hasn't been as strong in the US.
Well, I'm not entirely surprised to hear that. Martin, we forget about Gaza, Palestinians, and Israel in all of this. They become a sideshow, and one would be forgiven for thinking that the reason we're not taking much notice of it is that we actually think it's all over, that Trump has succeeded in his messaging. Ukraine's the big ticket. And Palestinians and Gaza are just going to be run over, and we're just going to take it.
Yeah, that's look, I think that's still that issue is still there, obviously. The thing about Gaza, and you and I discussed this before, I'm not convinced that Trump is serious about some of the things that he said. I think that they're sort of he likes stirring things up, and this idea about trying to evict Gazans from Gaza and setting up some kind of development there and the US taking over. I just can't see that happening at the moment. Now, I might be wrong, Michael. I think that clearly this week he's resumed arms shipments to Israel. So there's that. And there's a, you just heard reports of some explosions in Israel itself this morning, Michael, in the news. So there's a lot of still issues around escalation, that conflict that we should be very worried about. I think it's far from done and dusted. This issue of what happens when the conflict ceases, I'm not sure we're ready for that yet. I think that there's no peace terms, and there's been the longer term peace deal could be further away than we think.
I always try not to be alarmist, but I have to say I'm beginning to take Donald Trump very much at his word. I've said it before. I don't think you can treat his comments about Greenland or Panama in any sort of jocular way. I think he's deadly serious about it. How he achieves the outcome is a slightly different thing. He's had a lot to say about NATO over many years and the failure of, in his view, of the EU to contribute. He was always using the talking points out of Russia, it seems, last time and now this time. It could be a Moscow press release when you listen to Trump. What are NATO going to do? What is NATO going to actually formally end? Will the EU with Britain form a new pact amongst themselves? Are you starting to see some thinking out of the internationalists on this topic?
Well, one thing it could do is push those countries in Europe together. Now, I know they've got the EU, and I know they've got the those key nations are part of NATO. But Britain, as you know, had Brexit. We also know that the EU has not sort of really functioned as one entity. They've certainly never had a joint army before. This could actually serve to push key European leaders together. In a kind of existential way, where they might be really worried about their own joint security if they don't collaborate more effectively. It may push them to up defense spending, which would make Donald Trump very happy. The increase of defense spending around the world, I can't say that really gladdens my heart. Michael, I think that there's many other ways we could advance the world and the communities that live in it. Generally, that's yeah, health, education, all of those sorts of things. But we could be in for a bit of a Cold War type thing where everyone starts looking after themselves and bolstering their own defences.
Yeah, well, my worry, I have to say, Martin, is that it's hot war, not cold war, we need to worry about. But I guess we're going to see. I don't to say I don't want to be alarmist, but I'm feeling very, very testy about this this whole thing. Do you think it's going to affect the upcoming federal elections in Australia one way or another?
There's potential, and there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of people pressing Albanese on Trump's comments and the like. I note that Peter Dutton, who's been generally supportive of Trump's comments on the whole, has distanced himself very clearly from those latest comments about Ukraine. I tend to think Australians will be more focused on issues at home than what's Trump saying in terms of their polling.
Martin, international affairs, of course, can distract us entirely from what's happening here. We do have the federal election coming up. We know it. I think we're all starting to agree with what we surmised last week. It'll be Saturday, the 12th of April. But the WA election certainly is picking up. AUKUS gets mentioned in all sorts of comments. We had the great candidates debate for the state seat of Fremantle on Wednesday night at Notre Dame University. You welcomed, oh, some 300 people. It was a great night. What can we draw from it? What did you draw from the evening? Was there any sense of where the state election in Fremantle is going or broader issues?
Well, I was in the first instance, I was pleased to see four of those candidates rock up, and hats off to Simone McGurk and Kate Hullett and Felicity Townsend, Natalia Holland, if I've got her name right, I think, from the Animal Justice Party. They fronted up, took questions from the audience, put their positions and their vision for Fremantle. I'm not sure that we learnt a lot completely different, if I'm being honest, than what we know. They stuck largely to their core themes of their campaigns. It was a lively debate. There was a lot of energy in the room. It got a little bit raucous towards the end, which is not unsurprising in Fremantle debates. I think all of their supporters felt that their candidate flew their flag pretty well. But I don't think I saw things that really shifted the race, so to speak. I think I was a bit disappointed that we didn't get a few more of the candidates there.
Well, the Legalised Cannabis Party didn't come. The Christian Party didn't come. Amazingly, the Liberal Party candidate didn't come. Apparently, had a prior engagement. It is disappointing when those things happen. But on the positive side, the three main candidates, the first three that you mentioned, were there and were all quite lively. So far as the broader state election's concerned, are we seeing anything surprising at the moment? They're all promising to spend money on predictable things, I suppose.
Largely, the campaigns proceeded fairly predictably. The onus is really on the Liberals to try and shift the dial, because the polling seems to suggest that they'll pick up seats, but now we're near enough to actually win the WA election. And look, they're still having to spend a bit, fair bit of time talking about themselves. Michael, you will have seen headlines again today. They've lost a candidate, the candidate for Kimberley, who is saying some fairly vulgar things in an interview at The West. You had another one or two candidates that are staying out of the limelight because of previous things that they've said or done. All of these things don't really help if they want some clear air. The other problem they've got too is this is an ongoing shadow federal election campaign that's happening at the same time. So trying to get some air and coverage for what you're doing in that crowded setting is not easy.
Martin, we'll bring this view from the roundhouse to an end. Unfortunately, one suspects the bringing of the conflict in Ukraine won't come to an end quickly, or if it appears to have come to an end quickly, it's not going to be an easy settlement the way things are looking. Any bold predictions?
I think in the end, Trump can't try to conclude a peace agreement without Ukraine, because it would all fall apart and he'll end up with egg on his face. How do you conclude a peace agreement between two combatants without one combatant in the room? I can't see how that will happen. So I think he'll have to at least work with Ukraine. He's got a lot of leverage over Ukraine, because US has been by far the biggest single supplier of arms and equipment, and even things like security detail and all of those sorts of things that help keep Ukraine afloat. So he's got a lot of leverage, but all the same, he does need to actually engage Zelensky in those conversations. And at the moment, there's been a bit of a war of words between them. So I think that there might be a slight pivot there, and where the Europeans fit in, that's going to be interesting to watch.
Thanks, Martin. Very sane and sensible as always. I'm feeling, as you can tell, a little jittery about these things and want to come back and argue for a new place for Australia in the world on a future occasion, Martin. But for
Well,
now,
I think that could be another topic to open up at some stage.
excellent. For now, though, have a wonderful weekend and see you next Friday.
Thanks, Michael. Take care.